How does climate change affect health? And what can medical professionals do about it? Those are the very questions we hope to answer here on Code Green, the Climate Smart Health Professional. I'm Julia Rothschild, your host for today's episode. In this episode, we'll be digging into the relationship between climate change and mental health. We are lucky to be joined by Dr. Beth Hawes, who is a founding member of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance. In this interview, Dr. Hawes provides insight into her own journey of becoming a climate smart health professional. She also shares strategies we can use as healthcare professionals to care for our patients with climate anxiety, as well as strategies we can use to take care of ourselves. But before we dive into that discussion, what exactly does existing research show us about the impacts of climate change on mental health? A survey sponsored by the American Psychiatry Association in 2018 found that 48% of Americans already believe that climate change is negatively affecting our mental health, and this effect can be felt in many ways. For instance, when communities experience the trauma of natural disasters like wildfires or hurricanes, we naturally see an increase in psychological distress. So as individuals struggle to cope with an aftermath colored by loss, displacement, and isolation, studies have found a subsequent rise in anxiety, depression, PTSD, and substance use disorders. When considering heat waves, research has found associations between rises in temperature and suicide rates, as well as extreme heat and increased prevalence of intimate partner violence. It has also been discovered that many medications used in psychiatry, from stimulants to antidepressants, can interfere with an individual's ability to thermoregulate, placing our patients at an elevated risk of morbidity and mortality during heat waves. There are so many other elements of climate change and mental health that we could also discuss today, from the importance of green space on children's psychological well-being to the impacts of air pollution on neurocognitive decline. And with all of this, it's also so important to consider which of our communities are the most vulnerable to these effects, namely the elderly, children, individuals with severe mental illness, individuals experiencing homelessness, and any community members existing under poverty or other structures of oppression. Personally, when I begin to think about all the ways climate change can affect mental health, I find my own eco-anxiety hitting a new peak. So what can we as healthcare professionals do about it? To answer that question, we have Dr. Beth Hawes here today. Dr. Hawes is the Medical Director of Outpatient Behavioral Health at Carson Tahoe Regional Medical Center and is an Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Nevada in Reno. She is also a founding member of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance and the Chair of the Climate Committee for the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. Hawes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a delight.
So I'm interested in learning a little bit more about how you began to integrate climate change into your career as a psychiatrist. How did this interest in climate advocacy and research initially develop?
You know, I think I was raised in Northern California and really moved a lot as a kid. So often the outdoors was really my solace. And I raised a couple of young women, really fantastic people. And then when I started to have a little bit more time, it was also the time that it was becoming increasingly clear that we've all started got to put our pedal to the metal to get this problem taken care of. So it really just developed out of having the time and always having really loved nature and being quite devoted to preserving it.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure lots of our listeners can relate to the outdoors being a place of solace. So how did you go about then helping found the Climate Psychiatry Alliance? And how has this community helped shape your medical practice?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was very serendipitous, actually, the way we all came together. As you know, I started working on a movie. And the reason I did that was because I could have gotten a PhD or, you know, done some studying in climate change. But it really turns out that telling stories in an emotionally meaningful way is the best way to change hearts and minds in terms of climate action. And so we started working on that, and I met Lisa Van Susteren, who had been the earliest person to work on this along with Steve Moffick and Vivian Pender in psychiatry. And we did an interview with Lisa. And then we did an interview out at Bioneers in San Francisco, actually in Marin County at the old Frank Lloyd Wright building. And Robin Cooper, who was doing similar kinds of activism, just came and met me there. And we got to know each other. And then the three of us then started to add other people into the group. And we founded it in 2016. We've now been around for 4 years. We have over 400 members. And there's a core group of, between 7 and 10 of us that meet every 2 weeks. It's been a family for me for the last years. Really, really important group of people. And then we use those every 2 week meetings to get prepared to do presentations to the APA and other kinds of activities, which has really brought this into psychiatry.
I'm curious to learn more about your use of film as a means of storytelling and advocacy within medicine.
Yeah. And we may not finish it, to be perfectly honest. You know, I had a friend who's got 4 children who was in the first class training with Al Gore for climate reality leadership. And so she knew a lot of people. And she asked me, what should I be doing with my kids psychologically to prepare them for the future? And we went around and we asked a lot of very famous people, who had worked in climate change for many years, Joe Lieberman, a presidential candidate. And they really had no idea. But the reason for doing the movie was to really do that more expressive medium, to tell the story of 2 women working on this for their kids. We may wrap it up in some way that can be used in an educational setting or just as a kind of motivating tool.
What other methods do you find effective for medical education insofar as relaying the importance of climate change for our patients' mental health?
In terms of medical education, I really think conversations with people one-on-one and inviting them to work on something that they care about are the 2 most effective ways. I mean, we can teach about this and raise awareness, obviously, but it's really in conversation with people about the things that they care about doing that you get the most results.
That's a really interesting point. I wonder, with that in mind, what's your advice to future physicians or healthcare workers who will be seeing more and more patients with climate anxiety and other mental health conditions that are exacerbated by the effects of climate change?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to know is research shows that doctors are among the most trusted voices on this, right? So the most important thing that you can do is raise it with your patient as a health issue, right? So just the statement, climate change is going to have a significant role on your health, and taking action to have better policies around our country to protect your health is really going to be important for your future and that of your children. I think every physician should be prepared to say that and then talk about the impacts that are specific to a patient. Right. So for my patients here in Nevada, I routinely bring up the impact of air pollution on their dementia risk, on their pulmonary disease, things they can do, the best kinds of air filters. And in just having that conversation, they begin to take it more seriously. Right. If we talk about the heat impacts on their psychiatric medication safety, then they know that the higher temperatures are having an impact. And then if you can just connect the dots for them, right, that that's because of climate change and there are certain things that are happening in our society that you could support that will make this risk reduced, then you can get some traction in terms of people being able to engage it for themselves.
And do you feel like your patient population is generally pretty receptive to talking about the effects of climate change on their mental health?
Yes and no. To be perfectly honest, I live in a very red area of a state with a lot of older and extremely medically sick people, right? And so they are concerned, right? They're not necessarily as concerned as somebody in your generation, right? But they do respond to my bringing it up, for sure, and particularly when you talk about solutions. Right. And the other important point to make in this conversation is that you absolutely have got to get a lot of positive messages in about the good things that are happening.
Why do you think there are so many people who just don't seem as concerned?
That's a very complicated answer, right? Basically, we're living in a state of disavowal. Right. So we have this social reality that we live within, which does not talk about this, does not provide avenues for living sustainably. And then we have this, climate reality, which is totally different. And so we're in this constant doublethink where it's very hard to bring these ideas together. And it's frightening, right? It's obviously frightening. There's also a lot of cognitive biases which sort of keep you from talking about this effectively. Right? Unless you have a strong community to work with. So nobody wants to be the one bad apple that stands out, right? And there are many cognitive biases that support us fitting into our groups. So the most important thing is to establish a community of people that are living and working in a certain way, and then it becomes, you know, much more easy. But there have been huge gains, you know, and the more we do open our mouths, right, those opinion polls have shifted 40 points in the last 5 years, right? People can now see it. And before, it wasn't concretely visible to them, right? So they can see climate change happening. And that makes it more possible to talk about and to think about how you want to live. But there's so much baked in stuff in the American value system and in our American culture that is not sustainable. And so you're asking people to give up things that they're deeply committed to, right? Things like family and a big house and a nice lifestyle that were considered generative and were highly valued things, you're asking them to challenge, right? That's a tough thing to do.
So along those lines, what advice do you have when encountering individuals who seem more resistant to discussing the health impacts of climate change?
When you see yourself working within a value system that doesn't really support this, right? The most important thing that you can do is identify the similar value in the way that you want somebody to move, right? So I gave the example of wanting to have kids in a nice big house, right? Easy connection, right? We all value the future of our children, or we all care about kids. My way of caring about it is this way. Yeah. Yeah. So labeling that shared value, especially when you're dealing with people that are more resistant. And, you know, the Yale Center for Climate Communication is another really good resource. And in their opinion polls, they divide us into the six Americas. About 75-85% of people are in the category of on the fence or concerned about climate change. There's 15% of people that are rigidly dismissive or hostile to taking action. Don't waste your time there. Don't let yourself get caught up emotionally in fighting with those people. Move right along and work with the people that are thinking about it, even if they're still, you know, in conflict in some ways.
Beyond these one-on-one conversations with patients, how else might doctors and other healthcare providers advocate for their community's mental health within the larger context of the climate crisis?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you want to engage the various societies that exist for this, right? And so there's the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education is a really good group that brings all the specialties together. Many specialties now do have a climate group that is meeting and trying to provide advocacy within their profession. You can join My Green Doctor or Healthcare Without Harm or other organizations like that. You can join Doctors Without Borders or Burners Without Borders. There's a number of organizations that are doing relief work. And just raising your voice with your legislature is really important, letting them know how significant the costs are going to be, both the economic and health costs are, because you're a trusted professional in that realm. And modeling what you're doing in your practice, you know, both in terms of how you live, if your patients see you biking to work, or if they see you eating a particular way, or making sure you don't throw food, they'll really start to model on that. So I think those are the most significant actions that we can take.
How else do you envision the field of psychiatry making greater strides towards climate awareness?
Within psychiatry, there's a couple of meaningful things that we could do. And one would be to use a lot of telepsychiatry. We've really learned how to do that with COVID. And, you know, it reduces the carbon footprint of practice by 30-fold. And the other thing is to make our meetings more regional and virtual, right? Because even by just having intermittent regional meetings every third year, we can drop the carbon footprint of the meeting by 2/3. And the final thing, and this really pertains to you guys, is your residency travel, right? Because flight travel for residency match process is, you know, I think it's 20-fold worse with the numbers we were looking at than even the gains that we could make from virtual meetings. So if we could find a way to go to virtual residency matching until you get down to your last two choices or something, I think that would dramatically lower the carbon footprint of American medicine. You'd be surprised at how big the numbers are.
I think that's such a fascinating point you just brought up, you know, seeing the silver lining lesson from the pandemic, how the use of telepsychiatry and telemedicine and virtual conferences in general can greatly reduce medicine's carbon footprint. Do you have any other messages that you think could help instill hope in healthcare workers who are personally experiencing climate anxiety?
The tips I have are, first of all, to know that you're not alone, right? And to get connected to other people that are distressed about this. You need to take good care of yourself, right? Because nobody's going to be effective in a state of traumatic hyperarousal. And while you're doing that, evoking other things such as images or sounds of nature or pleasant memories of the outdoors to reconnect you to the reasons that you're doing this, or thinking about your dog or your grandchild or whoever it is that you're doing it for. And once you've sort of presenced yourself in that way, then you're going to be much more effective.
Could you expand on that further?
The basic idea is that if you're going to make meaningful change to engage this issue and deal with your anxiety, you're not trying to reduce your anxiety. Okay? You're trying to transform your anxiety into purposeful action. And the way that you do that is to spend some time in what's called positive rumination, meaning you sit and you think about it for like a while. Okay? And you need to do this like frequently, like we spend a couple of hours at least every 2 months just kind of talking about where are we at with this? What are we seeing? What are we feeling about it? And then from that kind of positive rumination, you begin to recognize what you care about, what's value-based for you. And when you act on your values, then you act in a much more effective way. It's much more easy to sustain your energy about it. It's much more easy to have a greater sense of spiritual commitment to it and greater spiritual awareness of the value of doing it. Often people connect to universal cycles and realize, you know, that they're tapping into something much, much bigger than themselves, community, but also, you know, really universes out there that are functioning in a particular way. And that's the most meaningful kind of action, and the most sustaining kind of action leads to the most growth.
I love that point you just made, how checking in on our own climate anxiety and on our own well-being is what can ultimately allow us to show up as an advocate.
You know, it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the sort of existential dread that you can feel when you confront some of the realities. And it could be really bad. It could be really bad, you know. But the other thing that is important is to remember that there's different kinds of hope that you can have within that process, right? And so sort of this is sort of the Titanic going down kind of hope, right? And they have different names: rational hope, reasonable hope, active hope, radical hope. So the people have sort of devised these subtypes of hope. But the basic idea is that within any chaotic situation, there's always meaningful moments and there's always opportunities to act. Right? And so if you focus on those, the anxiety gets a lot less overwhelming and it feels really good.
I'm really excited to carry what you just said about finding different sources of hope into my own practice of dealing with eco-anxiety. Dr. Haas, it's been such a pleasure talking to you about this topic. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank the members of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance, too.
A big thank you to the Climate Psychiatry Alliance for connecting us. We'll be sure to link their website in our show notes. That's it for today. I hope this episode has helped you feel more aware of the impacts of climate change on mental health and what you can do as a healthcare professional to help both your patients and yourself. Thanks for tuning into Code Green, the climate smart health professional. See you next time. Today's podcast is co-hosted and produced by me, Julia Rothschild. This episode was sound edited by Liana Haggis. We also have Maddie Tapman on Instagram and me on Twitter. Our other producers include Sarah Hsu and Natasha Sud. We also have Andrea Grossman as a sound editor. We also want to acknowledge the indigenous lands on which we are recording from. I am recording from Providence, Rhode Island, which sits on the traditional homelands of the Narragansett tribe. Dr. Haas was speaking to us from Reno, Nevada, which is the traditional homeland of the Washoe tribe. And lastly, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email at codegreenclimatepod@gmail.com or DM us on social media. Our Instagram is @codegreenclimatepod and our Twitter is @codegreenpod. Let us know if you have any ideas for future episodes. And lastly, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this show. Thanks so much for joining us and see you next time.